When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Accelerating your fandom, this is Flash TV Talk.
Welcome to Flash TV Talk, the fan podcast dedicated to news, reviews, and more for the 90s hit series, The Flash. That's right, it is a mini-series going back to Earth 90 in the years of the original Flash, starring John Wesley Shipp. I am your co-host, Bo, and with me, as always, is your other co-host, Belle.
Hello.
Belle, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. You know, it's cobwebs. Got to shake them off. All that kind of stuff.
I know, man. So we should go ahead. I want to address the folks. Let them know what they're getting themselves into, because this is the start of a brand new miniseries that we are doing, exploring every single episode of the 90s, the original Flash series, starring our man John Wesley Shipp. And man, I am super excited to get into this series for you. But for listeners who are not familiar with us, if this is your first time checking out the podcast, we traditionally talk about the modern series, or the 2010s series. What? Earth One, Earth Prime.
Yeah, the CW yeah. show.
The CW series, the Grant Gustin series, the Arrowverse series, whatever you want to call it. That is traditionally our bread and butter. But if you are listening to this in the future, you have now reached the point in the timeline where the pandemic has destroyed television. And so we are taking this opportunity to do something that our listeners have asked since probably the beginning, if not even before the series, or rather this podcast, which is to explore the 90s television series. And man, we put it out there as kind of a Patreon goal, especially to help us kind of get to the point where we can continue making content, even in this bit of a dry spell that we're experiencing with television. And man, you know, our amazing listeners delivered, and we want to give back in a big way. So before we dive into this, I want to let y'all know we are giving away a box set of the original 90s series to one of our patrons. So here's what you got to do to enter. Support the show. Head over to patreon.com/TV Talk. That's patreon.com/TV Talk, and sign up to support the show. And man, should we give just one, or do you think maybe we should give more than one?
I mean, come on. We got to give more than one.
I mean, like, we should, right?
Yeah. I mean, assuming we can find them, they're like extremely rare.
Very rare. Very rare. We will mine the multiverse. But you know what? You're right, man. Let's give them two. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give one probably. Should we give it next episode? Is that too soon?
I mean, yeah, why not? Why not? Like, we announce it here, right? Everybody knows what's going on. It gives people a chance to cash in on it, you know?
Get that early access. Yeah.
Early access. And then over the course of the show, as more people may have like, oh, wow, there's this opportunity here, they can, you know, also have a chance at the end. We'll do one the second episode and then one at the end.
Yeah, yeah, maybe the penultimate episode. That'd be good. That's like bookending right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sounds like planned marketing and not just trying to figure it out on the fly. So I love it, man.
Of course. Everything here is planned. Hashtag professionalism. Come on, man.
Hashtag professionalism. So that's right. Next episode, next week, we will be giving away a box set of the original 90s Flash series. So if you would like to enter to win, head over to patreon.com/TV Talk and support this show. We'll be giving away one now and one near the end of this miniseries. So excited to do it. And Bell, before we jump into this, I feel a little guilty doing this because every episode is somebody's new episode, and I prefer to jump straight into the content that people signed up for. But I feel like for all of our listeners who've been with us before, we got to address the marriage in the room.
Yes. Yes, I indeed got married.
Da, 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 da. No, wait, that's the wrong music. What's, da, 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 da. No, that's not. What's the one with the da 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 da? Is that it?
I think that sounded like O Canada.
Yeah, it did sound a little like O Canada. Well, congratulations, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Man, I love this. Over the course of this podcast series, people can go back and listen to the early days when you were single. You were out there on the streets in a bride costume, you know, trying to meet the ladies, and now here you are, the old ball and chain, you know, married, and man, you know, in the middle of a pandemic even. So I just wanted to say, man, congratulations. I love you. And yeah, she is a very, very lucky lady.
Yeah, I found my Iris West, my lightning rod, go. As you will.
Well, the question is, did you find your Iris West, or is she perhaps your Tina McGee?
Ooh. Big questions, big questions.
Wait, man, let's go ahead and dive into it. Let's jump into the rundown.
The rundown.
Episode 1 of season 1. The only season, but you know what? Consistency. Directed by Robert Iskove and written by
Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo.
Bell, what happened this episode?
Well, forensic scientist Barry Allen is struck by lightning and doused in chemical products that afford him superhuman speed, which he learns to control with help from Tina McGee, a scientist from Star Labs. When Barry's brother, a policeman Jay Allen, is murdered by his corrupt ex-partner Nicholas Pike, the leader of a vicious motorcycle gang of criminals, Barry uses his newfound abilities to bring Pike and his men to justice and decides to continue protecting Central City as the Flash.
Dun, dun, dun. All right, so first things first, man. When you went back, you watched this episode. Well, you know what? Actually, let's take it a little bit back from there. You know, we're going into this series. I have never seen this before. In fact, I probably should have even addressed that before the rundown. I have never seen this series before. And instantly, I am gathering so many Easter eggs that have been planted throughout the CW series that I'm just now catching up on. We'll get into all that. But before we do, what is your experience with this? Because as I understand it, I mean, you know, you've seen a few of these episodes, right?
Yeah. So I want to say I bought the DVD collection that they had out, right? I bought it, I want to say, like, maybe around the start of our podcast.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And I watched several of the episodes. I think I got like halfway through the season, and for some reason I didn't finish it. And so I think what it was the first Trickster episode. I think that's what it was. It was the first Trickster episode.
Yes.
And I wanted to see Mark Hamill on The Flash. And so I watched up to that episode, which might have been an earlier than halfway through the season. Because he was about to come on the CW Flash show. And so I was like, I got to see the OG source material here. So I picked it up. I watched to there. And then I never finished the season, and I've always wanted to go back and watch it. And so that's why I'm really glad we're doing this now, is because I have an opportunity to do that.
See it with those fresh eyes. I love it, man. Yeah. So, there's a lot to be mined from here. And what I love about this is, as I'm watching this, I recognize that it is impossible to go back and watch one of these kind of retro series without realizing that we live in a post Iron Man world. And what I mean by that is, like, our minds now work with every single comic book or geek property in a way that looks for connections, right? Looks for every single kind of off character that's mentioned off to the side. We wonder how that might play into the future or who this could potentially be. And for me, man, instantly I felt a connection between this and another film franchise that was existing only mere years ahead of this that I felt like could fit so perfectly in universe.
Did you now?
I did. Did you not get the cinematic Tim Burton-esque feel, like, from like 5 seconds in?
You know why that is, right?
Well, I would imagine because ultimately they're connected through the multiverse, which everybody had the foresight of knowing down the line with the crisis coming in 2020.
Well, sure, but also, and probably the big thing here, at least for me, was what's the one I guess, common link between this Tim Burton series that you're talking about and this Flash series that we're watching right now. The theme music. Think about the theme music.
Now,
who's the composer for both Tim Burton's Batman and The Flash?
Okay, so that's what I was curious. So is this, in fact, Danny Elfman who's been providing the music for The Flash, or is this just the pilot, or is this going to be the entire series?
So Danny Elfman composed the theme. So the Flash theme, that's Danny Elfman. The composer for the music throughout the series is Shirley Walker, and I mean, you can, it's very clear the influence that Danny Elfman had on Shirley's composing throughout the whole series. It's very, very, very Danny Elfman, and I love it. I love every second of it. It's wonderful.
Danny Elfman really did kind of define even that terminology, right? Cinematic experience. And, you know, I think we often kind of connect that idea around special effects and kind of the way something's shot. But realistically, man, the music does communicate a sense of world. It's almost like, you know, the air that's being breathed on set, or rather in universe, that kind of connects these two. And, you know, you got to kind of wonder, man, was there a mindset at the time, you know, that these two characters could meet up? Or was this just playing into the expectation of, you know, Batmania has been on the rise. We got Danny Elfman here. We want this to feel like it could fit right in universe. But realistically, man, like as a modern viewer, I am now expecting these two to team up. You know what I mean?
Right? Yeah. Like it's a shock that there wasn't some kind of, you know, coda at the end or something like that.
Right.
To show Batman or like Bruce Wayne opening up a newspaper saying like, who is this Flash guy?
I mean, you almost expect it. And it kind of, man, it breaks my heart a little bit because of, I feel, and it's not just the music. I would argue that the costume, just the feel of Central City as a whole, like this feels as though it could fit into the kind of Tim Burton version of Gotham City. Like this could work very, very well. Now, you know, we are going back and we are watching this series through the lens of people who are living in a post-crisis world, right? Like we now know what they did not know then, which is those characters do exist, coexist, just in alternate Earths. So while the viewer of back in the day may have had kind of this headcanon where, you know, all of these characters were existing on the same Earth, we now know that's not the case. We now know that there is an Earth 90 that we are now currently watching, that this series took place on an Earth, and that is separate from the Tim Burton Earth, which I don't remember off the top of my head, but we saw as part of the crisis, and it was not Earth 90. You know what I mean?
I think it was Earth 89, wasn't it?
That might be right. So they're pretty close. Pretty close.
It's just slightly different.
Slightly different. But anyway, man, I love the feel of it. I mean, it does have for the era this kind of big budget movie type of feel. The costume, we got to talk about this. I know it's kind of even jumping to the end because obviously we want to talk about this episode specifically. But, you know, you think back to Grant Gustin's original costume and it worked for the time. It was functional, but it didn't necessarily communicate superhero in the way that John Wesley Shipp's classic 90s Flash costume instantly communicates superhero, right?
Yeah, it's they both have kind of similar, like, quote, real world origins, right? You know, Barry's in the CW show was like, I think, a suit built for firefighters to protect them from like heat and, you know,
right,
the whole heat friction atmosphere moving fast thing. Whereas this one was like a Russian diving suit. But yeah,
you had to explain that red color, right? Like, oh, it's the Soviets.
Yeah, I mean, makes perfect sense.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. Like the first suit in the CW show, Grant Gustin's suit, it, you know, you could see it. If you squinted, it was like, yeah, I guess that's the Flash. But this one instantly, you know, it's just out of like, you know, it's a skin tight, you know, spandexy kind of suit. Shows off all the musculature, like just like in the comics. And it's from day one, it's like that is the Flash. And I thought that was really, really cool. As much as John Wesley Shipp hated that costume.
Yes, right.
Which we talked to him about that on some one of our earlier podcast episodes. But yeah, it's a great costume. And I think it just right off the bat, this is the Flash, and it just looks wonderful.
You feel as though you're existing in a comic book world where this costume does feel like it came right off the pages. And what I love, man, is it had those serious moments, and it had those kind of like over-the-top comic book universe-esque moments. For example, the Central City Armory. Now, this is a location that doesn't exist, but I feel like should exist in the CW series.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, just it's rife for conflict and all sorts of things. You know, you have an armory right in the middle of the city that bad guys can go and rob, and the Flash
right.
can
I know.
Go.
It's like, just put a giant target on it right there. Central City Armory, right here. Get your guns, you know. Like, yeah,
guns here. You there. Would you like some guns? We'll break on in.
Like, what, we got this major biker gang problem that's just run off of chaos, pure chaos, and they wanted to shoot up the city. What should we do with all the guns? Put them in the armory. Should we tell them where that is? Yes, put it big letters on the building so they know exactly where to go.
No. Hiding in plain sight. No one will look for guns in a building labeled armory.
Oh, they found it. How did they figured it out, man? That's some 2000 level IQ right there.
Four-dimensional chess these guys are playing.
Right. But no, man, the biker gang, like, again, we're watching this through the lens of the 90s, right? Like, this was it makes sense that a late, you know, you get a lot of feel of the carryover of the 80s pouring into this 90s series. And I think that the kind of over the top biker gang that is just out for anarchy and chaos with no real definition as to what their motivations are. Although I've got questions about that. What did you think about our biker gang here?
You know, it was very, very classic, like you said, out of the 90s, 80s, like the whole like drugs and like the metal music and all that kind of stuff. Like these were your stereotypical ingrates of society and whatnot, right? Like these outsider types, like they were very product of their times, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, you know, the series as a whole is a product of its time. There's a lot of kind of comments and commentary that I think, you know, does not age well, which I even hate saying does not age well because it implies that something was okay in back in the day when it's clearly not okay back in the day. But regardless, it's just odd watching something through the lens of, you know, in modern media, you probably wouldn't have this type of narrative, this type of lingo, what have you. And so you do have to kind of put on those 90s goggles to watch this. And then, like I said, on top of that, you have to kind of see it through the lens of what a comic book, you know, media experience, like comic book live action experience was in the 90s versus what it is now. You know what I mean? Like now we have, you know, purple faced Thanos going toe to toe with a gauntlet with shiny, shiny rainbow colored rocks. And somehow it's the most epic cinematic, you know, most like serious tear inducing thing on the big screen. Whereas the back in the day, they played it more of a comic-y, cartoony-esque type of way. Yes, with its serious moments. Yes, with its serious characters and a lot of emotion behind it. But the tone was a lot different. And that definitely comes across, I think, in the villains here. There's a fear factor. There's certainly a danger that comes along with the biker gang. But, you know, the giant scar on the face. This is where the tropes come from, my friend. This is not this is the origins of tropes. This is the era of the origins of tropes rather than the tropes themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know, they really set the stakes high at the very beginning when, you know, this gang rolls out, like, you know, the mom's yelling at the kids, get off the street. You know, you're not supposed to be out at night. And, you know, you might be like, oh, well, that's just a whatever. That's just a mom being scared and being a mom, right? And then the biker gang comes and starts throwing bombs and blowing up cars, and this one family almost gets exploded in their car with their baby. Like, you know, at the very beginning, you're like, okay, these guys are for real. These guys are serious. Let's
this is dangerous.
Yeah.
These are dangerous dudes.
Yeah,
you know, this is not. We're not just, you know, underground in a cave listening to heavy metal. And this is legit. They're doing some extreme destruction, chaos, and murder as we come to see as well. Man, we are introduced to Barry Allen's brother, Jay Allen, which I think was a great nod. I'm assuming that's a nod to Jay Garrick.
Yeah, I would guess so.
He's got the elder statesman kind of notion about him. Obviously, he's not Jay Garrick, but who knows? Maybe in universe he's this world's Jay Garrick.
Well, it was funny, like when they had that first scene where they introduced Jay, I was like, is this his like Uncle Jay Garrick, or like, and it's like, oh no, it's his older brother. Okay, never. Okay, yeah, that's right. Nice nod. Okay, good job, guys. You know,
it's a overall, I think that they do a lot with the comic book origins, right? Like they play around with some different characters, but much like the CW series, they very much made it their own. And so I think introducing Jay not only as Barry's brother, but killing him instantly, almost instantly, in the pilot episode. Really kind of communicates that while this will be a lot of what you know with the Flash, this is also going to take its own direction with the character and with the mythology. And, you know, this is something that we see throughout a lot of comic books as they make their way onto the big screen or the small screen. And I think it works out well here, even just in the relationship dynamics. We get introduced to an Iris West who is a graphic designer as opposed to a reporter. Iris, not just even a graphic designer, but like a graphic designer, I guess like 90s era, I guess just artist.
Well, it was like computer art. Like, you know, it was rudimentary field there. Like when she describes it, you know, what was it? Barry's mom's like, oh, so, you know, what kind of work are you in? She's like, oh, I'm an artist. It's like, oh, do you do photography or painting? She's like, computer painting, you know? So it's like, it's a thing that nowadays, computer artists are everywhere and they do all sorts of, art and stuff. But like back then it's like computer art, you can do art on computers. I thought computers were for typing and, you know, stuff like that. So it's interesting, you know, to look at these things from, you know, a very ordinary, computer artist. Okay. Whatever was like, weird and different, and because clearly the Iris on this show is supposed to be, I feel like she's supposed to be kind of like an alternative kind of person. She's not like in the mainstream, she's more like a counterculture kind of person, it seems.
You definitely get that. Is punk the right terminology for the not really, like a post-punk,
more like maybe like new wave, sort of like.
See, this is the thing. Anytime you get a series or movie or whatever you have that's like caught in between like two decades, you get this weird kind of leaning towards, like, so for example, this is constantly referred to obviously as the 90s Flash. It aired in the 90s, but it aired in the early 90s and it was shot in like the, you know, in 1990. So in many respects, this is much the 80s Flash as it is the 90s Flash, with the, you know, the feel, the tropes, the characterizations. I don't know, but you know what I mean, right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, it came out September 20th, 1990. And so it had to have been filmed probably, you know, early 1990, late 1989.
Almost all the influences coming from the decade of the past, which kind of took me out of this, because I immediately started watching this and I was like, why does this, like, this is the 90s Flash. Why does this feel like the 80s Flash? like those, what is up with that?
Oh, those coats. I want one of those coats so bad. It was like,
listen, we got to talk about the coats, man, because I love the way they actually use coats in this. For one thing, Barry, when he's in his kind of, you know, civilian, at least non-hero garb, he's constantly wearing his lab coat, and the lab coat almost feels like a cape, almost as if you see him as a hero before you actually see him put on the suit.
Hold on. That's not a lab coat.
Is that not a lab coat?
The only time he wears the lab coat is when he's in the lab. I'm talking about the over, like those are like, you know, 80s, the really light overcoat thing. Like, yeah. that was like 80s, like hardcore 80s. Yeah. It was like 80, like late 80s, early 90s, kind of like this fashion. Cause everybody wears loose stuff. Everybody wears like loose pants, billowing, like all, it's this really light fabric and everything. Yeah. Like that's like, you know, late 80s, early 90s stuff.
Wow. See, I just thought he was like rolling around in his his lab coat. And
we're talking about the gray coat, right? The gray coat. Yeah. That's like a 90s coat. That is like.
See, like that was some superhero garb, man. Like he's rolling around like he's got the cape. I love that, man. Visually, I thought that communicated that well. But who knows? Maybe that was just.
It was a costume choice, because that's what everybody was wearing then.
I love it. So we do see that him and Iris are having a little bit of, a little relationship trouble. He's trying to progress things along. She's kind of doesn't want that to happen. He wants to settle down. You see even the way he engages with his brother's son, with his nephew. And you almost kind of get the sense like he's kind of ready to grow up. He's got these two older men in his life, specifically his brother Jay and, of course, his father Henry. And you know, he almost kind of defines in the early part of the episode, you see him almost kind of defining who he is based on how they see him, right? Like, his brother's around. His brother thinks the world of him. He feels good with his brother. His dad's there. His dad has a very, you know, ah, cops, meh. You know, like, you know, he's like, ah, you're not a good enough cop, meh. You know, like, there's this, you can see the anxiety, you can see the frustration, you can see the emotional wall that exists there. And, you know, with the removal of his brother, with the death of his brother, the, you know, emotional kind of toll that that brings between him and his dad, and ultimately him coming into his own power, you see kind of him realizing, you know, oh, I don't need these other two dudes to kind of define who I am. I can be who I am. You kind of see that kind of uncle type relationship. When you see him at the end, he's almost kind of taking more of a paternal type relationship with the kid. Maybe, yeah. I'm reading too much into that, but that's kind of how I saw it.
Well, you know, the kid's dad died, right? And so, like, you know, obviously the kid missed his dad, and so he's telling him the story about his dad and the relay, and, like, you know, oh, you know, Jay never lost, he just ran out of track kind of stuff, right?
Right. And he said, I can't run like a dad, but I'll always be there for you. And I didn't cry. I was just blending those tears.
Yeah, and that's him you know, stepping up, right? Like he's gonna be there for Central City, he's gonna be there for his nephew.
Exactly. But you know, so I don't know. I kind of see his relationship with the nephew kind of, I don't know, representing a lot of what's going on in his life in this way. You know, almost as if, you know, before those other relationships are kind of removed and before he kind of comes into his own, he's just ready to become more like his brother. He wants to get married. He wants to have a kid. He wants to have, you know, a family. He wants to be this kind of person. And he ultimately finds who he is through the lightning and through the chemicals, which, by the way, love how they incorporated both of those things, if not, you know, the chemicals more so than the lightning itself defining his power, because that, of course, is the original origins for the Flash.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wrote down all the chemicals that he listed off when Tina asked him what was on the shelves, and I got a lightning generator and I'm going to do some experiments. And
I don't know. Didn't that almost kill him in Flashpoint? Like, there's no guarantee that always works. Yeah,
that is very true. I mean, we'll see. If we don't have an episode next week, my bad.
So he goes into the hospital like for like 2 seconds and he's ready to be out. We see a lot of tension there. He doesn't, you know, he just kind of wants to get back onto the streets and deal with the gang because cops, man. And, you know, his interaction with Tina McGee. Now, let me ask you something, Bell, because, you know, you mentioned that you found your Irish West, and I kind of mentioned early on, yeah, well, maybe you found your Tina McGee. Who are you shipping here?
That's a tough one, man.
Uh-huh. Who are you shipping, though? Who are you shipping at this stage in the game?
At this stage in the game, I think I'm shipping, I guess that would be, would it be Bina?
I don't know. They didn't have Twitter back then. Yeah.
Bina or
McGowan?
Terry?
So Tina Berry, Terry, you shipping the Terry?
I think so. I think at this point, I mean, it's like Iris has a lot of growing up to do, I think, in this season, or in this show. She seems a little bit, I don't know, like she wants to break up with him first off, you know.
that's she's not as committed. That's true. She's not into it. She doesn't want to really break up with him. She just doesn't like that he's trying to move it beyond where it's at.
Yeah, yeah. Like she has a fear of commitment that he does not have.
Yeah.
Although, you know, like you said, when he kind of comes into his own and he's defined by this event that turns him into the Flash, he starts to realize that I can't settle down as a superhero. It's not going to work. And so he's like, yeah, you know, I agree. Let's not do any of this. And so I don't know if that's him just kind of like trying to hold on to a relationship with her because that's what she wants. And he realizes that that's the only way that it would work between them is if they had some distance between them. Because she doesn't know. Iris doesn't know. Iris doesn't know what's going on with him. Only Tina does. And so that's why, you know, it feels like they're like Tina and Barry it's going to be more stable, right, for him. Whereas Iris, there's always going to be the questions of, oh, why do you leave all the time? I never see you here and all this kind of stuff. Like there's all those things that are going to happen because that's what happens with shows and relationships and things like that. And so.
Right. No, that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's very fair. Hang on now. If it's Westalin, shouldn't it be McGallan? McGee Allen? McGallan? Because if it's Westalin for the Iris, you know, we were all about the Byrus, but then the internet was like, we're not feeling the Byrus. We want the Westalin.
I mean, Byrus is so much better.
It is so much better. I know it's better. Should we claim Byrus for this then? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's going to be Byrus or Terry.
All right. All right, fair enough. All right, so Byrus to Terry. All right, so I'm going full on Terry with you, man. And I hate that, because normally I'm like, look, you know, they're destined to be together because comic books. And, you know, so like, you know, Iris on the CW's Flash and Barry. But part of that is like chemistry, too, like the chemistry the characters have and everything else. And there is just something about, you know, when Barry met Tina, the world stopped. It was almost as if time stopped. You saw one of the greatest loves of television of all time possibly transpiring right in front of us. So, yeah, no, I'm Terry all the way. I'm Larry for Terry, Gary for Terry.
No, there's no baddie for Patty kind of equivalent here.
No, there really isn't. There isn't. But I'm hashtag Terry, Team Terry all the way. Absolutely. Yeah.
T-A-R-R-Y, by the way. T-A-R-R-Y.
There you go. By the way, McGee Tech, far, far cooler looking than Cisco Tech. I'll go ahead and say that right now.
I mean, it's super retro. I mean, to our
eyes. Oh, yeah. Like, but why has Cisco never gone full retro? That's my question.
That's not his style, though.
Is okay. All right, but maybe it should be.
Maybe. Yeah. Like big old CRT monitors everywhere, and like weird patches that don't have wires attached to them.
It's the neon lights, my friend. That's what I'm talking about. Like when he was in the scanner, like the and like the hula hoops, the neon light hula hoops. Come on, man.
Yeah, and the. Gosh, all the decor in that Star Labs.
I need to go back and look at Mercury Labs on the CW show, man. I'm wondering if any of that made its way into Mercury Labs.
I wonder, man, because like the decor in there is just so awful.
It was great. It was wonderful. And I loved it. I loved every bit of it. By the way, Star Labs, I love how Star Labs here, much like the Star Labs of Earth Prime, heavily underutilized space, not nearly to the same size, but you know, she's like the only occupant of Star Labs.
Yeah, she's the only one that works there, I guess, which is convenient for what they have to do.
At some point, these like the multiverse is going to have to explain why Star Labs is always only ever occupied by one employee, like one scientist there the entire time, and that's it.
Well, you know, I guess Tina's husband died, and everybody else is kind of like, oh, I don't know about this place anymore. It's kind of a death trap.
Yeah, so is her husband going to play in the future? Because I started like speculating like crazy about who her husband might be. I mean, even before we found out that it was her husband that died, when they mentioned that somebody died in an accident, I thought maybe it was Cyborg. Like maybe that was a nod to a potential Cyborg reveal later on in the future, or maybe they were setting, you know, laying some groundwork, planting some seeds for something like that in the future. But then we, of course, discover it's her husband, and I don't know. I start thinking about Hank Henshaw. I couldn't quite come up with anybody in particular, but I don't know. What do you think?
I was thinking that it was going to be the Thinker, because she says specifically that it was like this enzyme that's supposed to increase your brain and stuff like that. Make you smarter, make you your brain work faster and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was like a nod to the Thinker, and that maybe the Thinker would be coming in at some point. She said that she found him dead, and there didn't seem to be any ambiguity beyond that point, unless, you know, later on it's revealed that like, oh, somebody escaped from the morgue or some like weird, you know, hints or something like that. But my first thought when she said enzyme that makes your brain work better, I was like, oh, he's gonna be the Thinker. And I think that'd be pretty cool.
That'd be awesome. That's interesting. Yeah. This is part of the fun, right? This series has been out for, you know, obviously 2 decades. three decades?
1990s.
So it's been out for 3 decades, man. And yet here we are speculating, since we haven't actually seen it yet. And it's legit speculation, which is kind of fun. Yeah. So I don't know. I think that's a great speculation there. Look forward to seeing it. You know, one of the things is when going back and watching this series through the lens of, you know, folks who have watched the CW series, you start to see, you know, references made in the original, this is the original series, but in the CW Prime and the Earth Prime series. For example, Julio, man. Julio was on the Flash, the CW Flash.
Was he?
Yeah. He was on the, I think he was on twice. He was on because at one point, oh man, I'm going to misremember this. If I'm remembering correctly, like he was the like police captain or police chief in the either pre-Flashpoint or post-Flashpoint. It's all pre-Crisis. But I think it was either pre-Crisis, pre-Flashpoint, or pre-Crisis, post-Flashpoint. He was the captain instead of Joe, or instead of Singh.
Really?
Yeah. And not only that, we saw him again because he, and I think he died. I think they killed him. And if I'm remembering correctly, he was him. Like, he was Julio. It was the exact same actor and the exact same character, albeit, obviously, a completely different Earth.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Untouchable was the episode where, if I'm not mistaken, he was in Flashpoint. He was he was the captain instead of Singh. And then post-Flashpoint, pre-Crisis, Earth One, he was killed by one of the, you know, and at that point, he was just a dude. I think he was a lounge singer. It's looking like what it's saying here. So, yeah. He was same actor, same character, albeit from a different Earth. And now that we're living in a post-Crisis world, they could technically bring him back. We don't actually know that he's dead at this point.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So fantastic. Loved that. Also, even just seeing Tina McGee and just instantly like, oh, yeah, and it's her. You know, like, loved it, man. I'm really, really enjoying understanding references that I never understood before. It's almost like watching Casablanca for the first time and realizing that you understand all movies. But yeah, man, anything else, anything kind of stand out for you, things that you've kind of picked up on that they either paid homage to in the CW series thus far?
I'm trying to, yeah, I mean, there is a lot. I mean, obviously Tina McGee being in the show, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
John Wesley Shipp, clearly. I'm trying to think of some other direct nods that we had. I know there's going to be more for sure. I mean, this episode had a bunch, you know, between characters that reoccur and things like that. But I'm drawing a blank right now. But I know there's more in the series later on that's coming up. So
that's the great thing, man. We'll be looking out for those on every single episode. Want to talk really briefly here about our villain that we dealt with this episode, Scarface.
Scarface.
Well, I mean, he's like, you want to know how I got these scars? Like, you know, like, what's that? A book I wrote for the police when I was a policeman. I was a police publishing house office, and now I got these scars by this guy.
My father was a police motorcycle driver and a fiend. One day he saw me speeding, and he was not happy.
Yeah, he's out here. He's you know, over the top. Like I said, over the top, right? Like I think that this is probably a good indication for what we're gonna see. I could be wrong throughout this series, which is that the more the drama, the more kind of serious elements are probably gonna come from our hero, and the more comic over the top elements are gonna come from our villains. Now that doesn't mean that they're not scary. I mean, there is a terrifying nature to this villain. I remember my kids were kind of coming into the room while he was being all, you know, tonight we dine in hell. And I was like, look away, kids. Don't look at Scarface. It's fine. Biker gangs. Biker gangs don't exist anymore. The Flash got them all. It's fine. But yeah, so that was he was a bit over the top. I will say his gal Friday, man, she ended up being quite the threat I did not expect when she straight up stabbed Barry in the leg.
Yeah. And like, she tricked all those officers and blew them all up in the car with her, you know, doing the whole damsel in distress routine on the bridge. Yeah, she was definitely a femme fatale type, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. That was interesting. I mean, we got a chance to see kind of the dynamics, the social dynamics of our evil biker gang. Broke into the prison, gave everybody the guns, released them on the city. Scarface also channeling future Bane. He had a lot going on for him, actually. This is what he did. He went to the future. He watched all of the Christopher Nolan films, and he kind of came back and he's like, guys, the Christopher Nolan films are way better than the Tim Burton films. I'm going to be a Christopher Nolan villain, but with like 90s flair. And they said, you can only do it if you're leading a biker gang. And he's like, yeah, okay, sure. Let me go around telling people I got these scars and release the prisoners and give them guns and stuff. And, you know,
nobody cared who I was until I got the scars.
That's right. Oh, man. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, there you go. That was I think it was a solid pilot, man, especially for the era. I mean, look, it was almost like you were watching I mean, you're almost watching Tim Burton's Batman. And I mean that not in like a copycat kind of way, but in a like perfectly fitting into, I think, where the desire was for fans of that day and age. And also just really kind of writing, you know, laying out a pretty substantial check that I hope will get cashed throughout the course of these, 22 episodes?
Yeah, 22 episodes. And it's funny you mention, you know, Burton's Batman, because this... Yeah, there are a lot of influences there, you know, thematically and things like that. And also the pilot episode was an hour and a half long. Like, that's feature length.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, they were shooting for the fences.
Yeah, like, I had completely forgotten about that. I was like, is this pilot going to end in a cliffhanger? I mean, like, we're coming up on, you know, 30 something minutes and like, you know, he's not even in the suit yet. Like, what's going on? And then I remembered that the pilot was an hour and a half long, and I was like, "Oh, okay, but It works, right? The structure of it really works. Like, you know, you got a three-act story and this hour and a half long pilot episode, and it really gets you invested and makes you want to watch more. So, I think it was a wise decision to go with an hour and a half pilot. It's sort of, you know, I'm assuming they shot it that way, because in the event that they didn't get the series run, they would have a really cool origin story, like somewhat movie thing for The Flash that they could maybe pitch to another network. Who knows? But It was cool. Like, you know, you don't see that a lot.
Wow. Yeah.
Usually, like, you're seeing like backdoor pilots in other shows. Like, for example, The Flash, the CW Flash was a backdoor, like, there's a backdoor pilot with Barry Allen was introduced and things like that. And so to have this like hour and a half long, really good, focused and, you know, tight story did it really well. I mean, I think it served its purpose, and you know, clearly they got a season run from it, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, man, I'm excited for this series, excited to be diving into it with you, especially over these next couple of weeks. You know, just taking, you know, cranking the clock back by three decades, man, 30 years, and exploring the groundwork that was laid for the series that we know and love today. So that we now know is in universe, or at least in multiverse, which makes it even better. In fact, after this is all said and done, man, I kind of want to go back and watch the, I guess it was two or three episodes, both in The Crisis and I want to say, what was it? Elseworlds, where he first showed up, right? Like, briefly, he showed up on Elseworlds.
I believe so.
Yeah.
It was when Barry was running, right? Like, in the tunnel, we see the costume.
Well, it's not even that. Like, that is true. He does see that. Actually, that was in the season one finale. But no, I'm thinking about Elseworlds, yeah, where he pops up to let him know, like, hey, we got a problem. And he's got, like,
dead heroes
from, you know, Earth, whatever Earth he was on. And, you know, you get the sense they kind of pulled all these heroes from across the multiverse to combat the, you know, the Anti-Monitor. And, you know, he gathers everybody up. Although, actually, you came in before that. I don't know. Anyway, point is, I want to go back and rewatch those. All the more reason why I want to go back and rewatch those episodes so we can really see this character. We've seen his origins here, and we'll get a chance to see his conclusion. Look, there's so much more we could talk about and will talk about over the course of the next episodes, including the special effects, the methods they went to kind of communicate the running effect and that sort of thing. And I know we're going to have a lot of fun with it. So we hope that you'll enjoy this series with us. If you want to get the box set, if you want to be eligible to win one of the box sets that we are giving away of the 90s Flash series, head over to patreon.com/TV Talk. And there, by supporting the show, we'll be drawing a name from random next week. So get in quick. And who knows, you might be the winner next week. Also, we'll be giving away another one as we get further along in the mini series. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'd love to have you with us as we go along the way. Share us your thoughts. Are you somebody who watched the series back in the day, or are you somebody who has kind of picked it up later on? Is the CW Flash your first Flash, and going back and rewatching this is actually kind of the second Flash series for you? We want to hear about that. You can follow us on Twitter at Flash TV Talk. You can also let us know individually at The Real Bo York or at Ring That Bell.
But if 240 characters is enough to express your love for our show, feel free to email us at flash@podastery.com. That's podastery.com.
And you know what? We don't have a lot of news or daily things to discuss.
for,
but that
for this particular show that's been out for 30 years, yeah.
Well, look, we're going to try to break you the news with this, specifically with the CW show and where things are going. You know, one of the things I notice is people, and I'm not going to name names, but folks will say, like, oh, they're shooting again. Oh, this is going to be the release date. And I'm like, y'all, no, it's not. And then it's like, oh, well, they thought it was going to be the release date and now it's not. And I'm like, yeah, guys, come on. You gotta, any, as soon as we know anything official, solid, and like there's film in the can, we will let y'all know. So keep up with us, facebook.com/FlashTV Talk. We also want to give special thanks to Charlie Bach, who provides our outro music. You can find out about more from this show and other shows at tvtalk.fm. Hey, we've got some great video game content as well with Flashcraft, putting out some YouTube videos and the like. You can find out more information about that as well at tvtalk.fm. So check us out there. All right, man, I think that's going to do it for us. Any final thoughts, Bell?
Man, I'm super excited to go through this show again. Like, it's a lot of fun. I had so much fun watching the pilot again. And I get to finish the series now, so that's amazing.
Yeah. Man, it's going to be a blast. Don't worry. We'll be back in a flash. Welcome to Flash TV Talk, the fan podcast dedicated to news, reviews, and more for the hit CW show. Wait. What network was this on?